What's up, guys? I'm Dmitry Lipinski, and welcome to the Roofing Insights podcast, the show that lets you take roofing insights on the go. If you have ever wanted to enjoy Roofing Insights content on your drive to the job site or while you're at the gym, this podcast is perfect for you. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode.
Today's guest is the wildly successful Graham Desert. Graham has overcome a number of hurdles in his life, and today he has his own roofing business and helps educate the next generation on how to become better, more purpose-driven individuals. You guys will love Graham, but really quick, have you ever wanted to learn how you can measure roofs and give more accurate estimates? Well, thanks to the awesome team at RoofGraph, you can now measure and quote smarter using the industry's leading takeoff tool. For just $50 a month, you can have roof measurements, custom proposals, unlimited templates, and so much more right at your fingertips. Visit roofgraph.com and let their experts take care of you and your business. Now, grab your popcorn because Graham Desert is about to drop some truth on you guys.
Roofing 101.
Mm-hmm.
How much did you spend on the rebranding?
It was probably between the rebranding, like the logos, building the brand book, the consulting hours, the interviews, building the customer journey. I think it's probably close to 30,000.
I could probably do it for like 28. Why would anyone spend $30,000 on rebranding? I mean, Desert Companies was a good company, last name, legacy.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to do it? And what's the results? Would you recommend anyone to rebrand?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is, so my last name, okay? My last name is Desert, spelled like dessert. And so, you know, I kept on getting emails and phone calls for like wedding cakes and shit like that. Like you know.
So it was misleading.
So it was very misleading. People had no idea what we did. So, I mean, you think about it, you take Desert Companies and you put it into Google. What are you going to get? Well, of course, you're going to get pie shops. You're going to get people that do wedding cakes, stuff like that.
Wow.
So I would get all kinds
of weird. Perception was not there.
Yeah, so there was a misalignment and market confusion, and it was great for the town where I was, but if you're gonna expand and grow.
Was it Kansas?
Yeah, it was in Kansas. So I grew up in Leavenworth, Kansas, and you know, it was great for that town. Everybody knew, you know, who I was.
How
they
big of
the
company did you run at that time when you decided to rebrand? Because I remember you running Desert Companies, and I remember starting with the Roofing 101.
We were about 5 million.
Nice.
Yeah, 5 million.
I mean, guys, I want you to think about it. You're on $5 million company. Mm-hmm. You know, you're top 5% in the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, for the most people, you made it, and you're like, no, I can do better.
Yeah, that was the mindset. And so, you know, I remember it was in 2016. We had a great year, and we were continuing to grow and develop. And my wife and I made the decision. You know, we're gonna move. We made the decision together. I still remember the phone call. You know, she was on a retreat in San Diego, and I could just hear the joy in her voice. And we're on the phone, and I'm like, you know what? Let's move. Let's move to San Diego. And she's like, are you serious? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And so I was so afraid.
I remember that time.
Yeah, dude. And I was.
We were friends, and we were talking about it.
Yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, man, if I don't start telling people we're moving, you know, we're going to back out. And so I was like, a week later, we're telling her mom, a week after that, I'm telling my parents. And then a week after that, you know, we had a company meeting and made the announcement, had no plans in place whatsoever. We just said, we're going to move, and we got 9 months to figure it out.
Wow. And I remember that. And this is actually a great example of how Facebook friends become real life friends.
Yeah.
I remember Graham called me or texted me. He's like, Dmitry, I love your story. You asked me, and how he approached me was actually my opinion on Putin. He's like, what do you think about Putin and Medvedev and, you know, Russian politics? And it's like, I'm like, okay, let's talk about that. But I remember that, like, I like your take. I like immigration story. And that's how we started talking. And then we started meeting each other, different conferences we have. same mentors, essentially. I'll get back to your story, to your move a little bit later. I have a personal section here.
Yeah.
But so rebranding was, I want to talk a little bit about rebranding.
Yeah.
So $30,000.
Yeah.
You moved to California. Now yeah. you have brand new business, essentially, brand yeah. new name, and you mm-hmm. running your company remotely.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It was good. We had, you know, it was challenging at first because, you know, I'm like, man, how am I going to do this? Well, you know, I grew up in the franchising world. And so you develop systems and processes and you put people in place to run those systems.
How many years have been in business at that time?
At that time, so I started in 08, 09. So I think at that time it would have been less than 10 years. So 8 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 7, 8 years at the time.
And now you're already 4 years, essentially growing from California.
Yeah.
Living your dream life.
Yeah.
Your business runs itself. I mean, you're yeah. still involved. Let's talk about partnerships. You have partners
yeah.
now.
I have a partner now. Yeah, partners, multiple.
Multiple
yeah.
partners.
Yeah.
Tell me, how do you find partners?
Yeah.
How hard it is to find a good partner?
It's hard, and you know, sometimes it's a lifetime venture. I feel like for me to grow and for the company to grow, I put the mission and the vision of the organization before my own personal needs.
Okay.
Because yes, I can run the organization and, you know, I can do $5, 6, 7, 8, 9 million a year, no problem, and make a great living. But the problem was the mission of the organization was bigger than that. And so I needed help. It wasn't something I could do by myself. And so the people that are now partners are people that I've met through the years. So Takuya, who is the CEO, so we named him CEO at the beginning of the year. I met Takuya in 2006 at a company we used to work for.
I see.
So he was.
So you recruit people from your network, essentially.
Yeah. So through my network, people that I've known for a long time. And then Austin, who is our COO, I don't know if you remember at the Rodney Webb conference when they did the pitch off. This was in 2016 or 17. I don't remember the exact year. But our company went to the finals and we were head to head with Austin's company.
I see. I
and
remember
so
that.
we won, and so it's crazy because now, you know, 4 years later, 5 years later, we're now business partners.
Wow.
You know,
and how I want you to think about is how amazing is that? Like literally, you're competing. You're like, and one of the things that Rodney Webb, he always mm-hmm. will tell you, no recruiting. You get recruited.
Yeah.
You try to recruit someone at yeah. the conference, you get
yeah.
kicked out.
Yeah, no recruiting whatsoever.
And you broke that yeah. rule.
Well, we didn't break yeah, it. Yeah. I didn't break it, you know? Like this happened, you know, 4 years later. So like
Rodney about it.
Yeah, he'll slap my hand.
How do you make sure that your partner works as hard as you do?
That's a good question. You know, there's an element of trust. You know, there's an element of trust and, you know, you don't want to partner with people you don't trust. And part of that is, you know, there's three components of it. And number one, are they competent? Do they know what they're doing? You know, and so every single one of my partners is competent. You know, do they have the same common goals? You know, so that was a very big thing. You know, you have to share the same vision. You have to share the same mission. You have to want to accomplish the same things. If you don't want to accomplish the same things, there's a misalignment and it's not going to work. And then the next one is character, you know, the values of the individual. So we all have, you know, the same common values and we all align in that sense. So it works.
Love it. You moved from Kansas City to California. Mm-hmm. I've been in Kansas City. I've been in your office.
Uh-huh.
Literally nothing there. Yeah. I remember I couldn't find like a restaurant like to eat like decent.
Yeah.
Like in a hotel, it was just, I mean, whatever.
Yeah.
But in San Diego, huge change. And essentially you started running your company remotely
mm-hmm.
and you rebranded.
Yeah.
Like I want to zero in a little bit on that. How do you go from all of this to like, I mean, essentially that's the dream of most entrepreneurs out there. Build a business like McDonald's that just...
Yeah.
Gross and you don't have to be there.
Yeah. So it's a loaded question and there's a lot that needs to take place. So you need a management team, you need systems and processes, you need people that you can trust, you know. I had all of that and it took a while to build it, but we put it together, You know, I had a management team in place that ran the business, and they did a really good job, you know. You know, remotely, it wasn't easy. Probably the biggest, what it forced me to do is it physically forced me to let go, because part of the biggest problem with business owners is letting go and putting people in place and letting them do what they're hired to do, mm-hmm. you know?
True delegation, right.
True delegation. Trust. And mm-hmm. you know, there's a way that you can delegate and really mess things up. Like, you can passive delegate. And so I'm guilty of passive delegating, where it's just like, well, here you go. I'm assuming that you got it. When you assume, that's where you make an ass out of yourself. You assume, you know? So you have to make sure that person is competent and they have clear direction on what they're to do, what their roles and responsibilities are, how they're being compensated. And we put all that in place and it worked out well. And then once I got San Diego started, I knew at that point, I needed a coach. You know, this wasn't something I could do on my own. I wanted somebody to hold me accountable. Could I do it by myself? Yes, but I wanted the extra piece of accountability. And that's where I hired Takuya who's my now business partner, to be my coach along the way. Mm. We worked together for 2 to 3 months. And after 2 to 3 months, you know, our values.
How did he make you accountable?
Well, we do weekly phone calls, one-on-one phone calls. You know, we have our own terms and our own, you know, the way we do things, but sure. You set up a business plan. In that business plan, you break up all these metrics. You have monthly metrics, weekly metrics, quarterly metrics. So all the metrics are broken out. Then you identify the key activities that need to happen to make all those metrics happen, right? And then it's pretty simple. You schedule those activities. And then as long as you're working and doing those activities, right, then the goals get hit. The cool thing is that what I liked about and what I like about business is that challenges come in the way. Problems come along. And, you know, problem solving is the one thing I don't like to do alone. I like to have people around me problem solving, you know. And so that was the key benefit of having Takuya and I talking once a week, is he would help me problem solve, you know, issues, key issues that would come up. And so now one of the things that we've implemented in our company is it's what we call L10 meetings. So there's this book called Traction, which I'd recommend anybody out there.
EOS.
Yeah, the EOS, Entrepreneur Operating System. We started that at the beginning of last year.
So many businesses doing it. Every single successful business I interviewed in the last, you know, 2 years, they've done it. Like, we've done it.
It's yeah. Amazing. Yeah. It's great. So now
we've... The right people in the right seats.
Yeah. Right people in the right seats. You know, everybody's rowing in the right direction.
I'm going to put a link to the book in the description below. Yep. It's amazing. Worth it.
Yep. So that's how it all started. And, you know, we can go back to the branding part. I spent a lot of money on it, but it was like, you know, I had to ask this key question. Do I want to build, I don't want to stay with the same poor brand that I have. I don't want to build something good. I don't even want something great. I want something exceptional, right? And so if I'm going to build something exceptional, I'm going to hire the right person to help me build this, right? And so I hired a consultant out of San Francisco. The guy's named Edward Lehman with Growers and Nomads. Does a phenomenal job. He's worked with some of the top brands. He's worked with Nike and Gap and some other home improvement, sure. You know, franchise systems. I was familiar with Edward. I brought him in. You know, some of our first conversations were around the belief structure that I had, you know, because what you have to understand is what you believe is how you're going to lead. And that's ultimately going to turn into the customer experience. You know, it's going to turn into how the employees do their job, which then turns into, you know, the customer experience. So we spent a lot of time identifying what the belief structure of the organization was, which ultimately was mine, and also some of the key employees, you know.
The thing is, you moved away. My question is, would you agree that your business could be a little bit more profitable if you would be present? Because every time we walk away, we know it's going to rain, problems going to come, and your profit margin probably not going to be as high. Because when you're present, it's a tighter ship.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm pretty sure McDonald's, that, you know, with the owners, will be a little bit on point. But then how much would you say in percentage-wise you lose when you're not present? I mean, like, I know even for my business, I can make more money, I can be more profitable if I'm there every day. But now I go from working 10 hours a week to 60 hours a week. So it comes with a price, right? What's your answer to that?
Yeah, that's a good question, and that's a good point. I mean, for us, we actually were in the middle of, you know, the Rodney Webb system. So, you know, our profitability stayed the same. So gross margin stayed the same. I'm sure it dropped a tad because I wasn't there. So I would say from a material standpoint, our material cost probably went up, you know, a point or two. Just based on ordering, because, you know, I used to do a lot of the ordering, and
you're micromanager.
I micromanage that.
Why would pay more here?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you're walking in the business and you find money on the floor. Like,
yeah.
Why that is on the garbage?
Dude, so I spent an hour with the guy who does all of our ordering now. And I was just walking through probably about three or four previous orders. And I'm like, this. And just by having that 1 hour conversation, we're saving a point. Yeah. You know, like, it's such an important conversation. So that's something that I know was that hurt us. But we regain points through tighter supplements and then also through selling upgrades. You know, so we don't give away. It's the equivalent of restaurants giving away bacon on a burger or giving away avocado on a burger. They charge for bacon, they charge for avocado. So in an insurance claim, why are you not charging for IR shingles? Why are you not charging for ice and water shield? Why are you not charging for the platinum warranty, right? So we charge for that.
So, but what you get, so you're losing a point or two here, but you live in San Diego now, right? Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of guys don't understand. People ask me all the time, you know, like, I understand, I'm in the same position, a $4 million company, but I do roofing insides. This is my joy. This is my California. I travel, I meet new people, and people like, do you realize that you can be running like $10 million company? I'm like, yes, but it comes with the price, with the headaches, and you're there, you're burning yourself up, you're not living your dream. Would you agree with that? Like, I mean, what else drove you to California? I want to talk about a little bit personal.
Yeah.
What made you that?
Well, you know, it was time for a life change, man, quite frankly. You know, we lived in the Midwest. When we first got married, we knew we weren't going to live in the Midwest forever. And at some point we were going to move. And, you know, it got to that point. It was time to go. And if we didn't leave now, we felt like we weren't going to leave. You know, we were too comfortable. You know, the business was doing well. You know, we're in a neighborhood we loved. My sister lived two doors down. My parents lived around the corner. We went to a gym, you know, like, I'd love, like, you know how hard it is to find a good CrossFit box. We loved, you know, the gym that we were in and the culture we were around, but we felt too comfortable, and I felt like there's more out there. And quite frankly, you know, and I'll bring it up. You know, I had an alcohol issue. You know, I had for years, I had an alcohol problem.
How long have you been sober? And,
I've been sober for 5.5 years. Wow. Yeah, 5.5 years.
I want to meet Graham, the bad boy. How bad was it? How bad was it?
All right, so this is how bad it was. And I don't mind talking about this. Sure. So I would go to the gym, and this is how I knew I had a problem. Okay, so I would go to the gym, I'd work out. Immediately leaving the gym, I'd drive through the liquor store. Okay. I'd get one of these little bottles of like Jack or Jim Beam, right? And then I'd go to the gas station, get a 32-ounce bottle of soda or styrofoam cup, right? Drive home. And on my way home, as soon as I pull into the neighborhood, I'm pouring that bottle into the styrofoam cup. And then as soon as I park my truck, I'm downing it. So I down it before I go in the house, right?
Wow.
And so I wouldn't go. It got to a point where
after you worked out.
After I work out.
Was it your reward or what was it?
Like, I don't know. It was just a messed up mentality, you know.
Wow.
It was a messed up mentality, and quite frankly, it was very, very I was very broken. And it's not something I'm really proud of.
How did you get out of it? Like, the thing is, and you were successful at the time?
Yeah.
Stressful at work or what else was
not stressful. It wasn't stressful. Business was good. It wasn't stressful. you know, my marriage was good on the outside, you know, like, in quite frankly, it was a train wreck, looking back at it.
Sure.
And what changed, this is what happened. You know, I think my wife went out one night and, you know, I passed out. You know, I was in charge of the kids, right? And so it's like, I think 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock or midnight or something like that. And I wake up to a glass of water being poured on my face. And that's my wife.
Wow.
And she's like, if you don't change, I'm taking the kids and I'm out of here.
You know? And you were drunk.
I was drunk, passed out on the floor.
Wow.
Yep. And, you know, I had to make a choice. She took the kids, walked out, went to her mother's for the day. And I was sitting there in the house alone, like hungover, like, what am I going to do? You know, like, here's alcohol, here's my family. Alcohol, family, you know? And I know this road, you know, the alcohol road. You know, you go down that road, it's just like, you go to those AA meetings and in those meetings, there's all kinds of stories. You know, I lost my family, lost my business, I'm broke, I live on the streets. I mean, all kind, and you know what? And I looked at that and I'm like, that is not me. That's not me. But it was so hard. It felt like I was going to cut off, like, you know, my wife gave me the ultimatum and she's like forcing me to cut off my arm. That's what, you know, what I could hear in my head, like, you know. So I just made the decision. My wife and my family is more important and I'll do whatever it takes. And so that was January 24th, 2015, I believe. Yeah. And since then it was like, I never looked back. And I went through a period of what you would call recovery, I guess, you know, where it's like,
detox.
I had to change my friends, I had to change my habits.
You had like drinking friends?
You know, yeah, people you'd see at bars and, you know, like I just wouldn't respond to messages, you know, things like, you know, I'm going to parties, like St. Patrick's Day was like 2 months later. You know, sure. So I would go to a party, but I'm like drinking coffee, you know, and St.
Patrick's
Day.
How hard was that? Give some advice to people who maybe quit, but they still have their circles.
Yeah. You listen, man, people are going to try and pull you back. It's like the lobster effect. You know, you ever hear the lobster effect mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, you have lobsters in the bucket and then one lobster tries to get out and then they all just try and grab them. It's like, look, you don't belong in the bucket. You know, get out of the bucket. And anybody that tries to pull you back in the bucket should not be in your circle. You know, there is a better life outside of, you know, drinking and alcohol and all of that. Like, especially if it's a problem, you know.
I see so many guys. It's funny. I go to, like, sometimes for lunch, I go to several restaurants around mm-hmm. and they are like restaurants. You sit down. And the reason I go there, because fast food is, mm-hmm. you can't sit like with a computer and stuff. So I go there and I see the same faces at the bar and usually contractors.
Yeah.
And I rarely go, like, I have Mexican place and I would go there like once in 2 months. Mm-hmm. You know, I come in and there's like two contractors sitting at the bar. I'm sitting at the table and I see the same two guys. I would go there like five times a year. And those five times a year, they're always there at lunchtime for like hours, just drinking during the day.
Yeah.
Such a common problem, but nobody thinks it's a problem. It's a day drinking, it's hiding from family and wives and employees maybe.
Yeah.
And I see it's an epidemic. I would call it that.
Yeah, I would definitely say addiction is a real thing. Addiction is a real problem. It's a real thing. And it doesn't just plague contractors. It plagues all humans. And there's all kinds of addictions. You know, there's pornography addictions. There's, you know, alcohol addictions. There's drug addictions. There's, you know, believe it or not, there's exercise addiction. I mean, there's addictions for all kinds of stuff, right?
I made a video this morning about this, and I said, replace happiness with happiness. And exactly what I talked about. I talked about porn.
Yeah.
I talked about alcohol.
Yeah.
And I talked about money.
Yeah.
And my point was, if you're addicted to porn, you know, replace it with different, like, that brings you happiness, but it's one happiness.
Yeah.
It's never going to fulfill you. Invest in a relationship. Some guys don't know how to talk to a girl anymore.
Yeah, because what it does is it's a wall between any relationship that you would have, not just with a woman, but with, you know, buddies, with your sons, your daughters, your mom, your dad, your sisters, your brothers. Because what it does is it will essentially, you know, it's all fake. you know? And so it portrays something that we're not, that, you know, women will never be, you know? And so now you have this expectation for how women should be or men should be and how they should act, you know? And this is getting really personal and deep, but sure. It's like, look, it and that's not healthy, because then we go into relationships and we expect, you know, women expect our men to act a certain way, you know, and men expect women to perform a certain way. And that's just not realistic, you know?
How do you rewire yourself? What tips would you give to someone who is addicted to something? Is it finding a mentor, talking to someone? Because people are afraid to talk about
it. Number one, you got to get help. You know, don't be too proudful and prideful to get help.
Where do you look for help?
You know, find a therapist. Find someone who's certified and able to handle addictions. And, you know, which I'm not, but I've gone through a lot of different addictions. And the best thing that I can tell you is take your thoughts captive. You know, we have 12 to 60,000 thoughts a day. 80% of them are negative and 95% of them are repetitive. So just think about that for a second. 12 to 60,000 thoughts a day. So a couple things come to mind, and we have the greatest.
And your thoughts are not your thoughts. That's what you see. That's what's, your thoughts are not your thoughts. I'm telling you that much.
So we have, you know, God gave us this amazing mind. It's the most amazing computer programming device ever created, you know, the brain and the nervous system. It doesn't come with an owner's manual. You know what I'm saying? Yes. And so like,
well, it does. Nobody likes to read it.
Okay. Got it. Okay. Very good. So here's the thing. So you have that, and then, you know, you have this greatest computer, and then it's like there's all this negativity around. You have these negative thoughts, whether it's like words that people have spoken over you, coaches, teachers,
parents.
You know, parents, brothers, sisters, kids at school, whatever, right? And then we agree with it, and when we agree with it, it stays with us, right? And so that's that negative, repetitive cycle that keeps on going on. And so how do you break that? Well, you know, that's the big question, is how do you break it? Well, we could be here all day long talking about it. But you know, it's super important for, you know, people to move on. And part of the healing process with addiction is actually forgiving people that have, you know, spoken over you, you know, that have done you wrong in any way. And so the problem is, when you don't forgive those people, you're running around with all these anchors. And so you're being dragged down and dragged down and dragged down. And then your day just gets heavier and heavier and heavier. And whether you know it or not, subconsciously, that's what's going on. And so then what do? Well, you numb it with all kinds of addictions and all kinds of things that will keep you from, you know, pursuing the truth, right? And a better life. And so the number one thing that you can do is take your thoughts captive, understand where the thought came from. If it's negative, trace it back to where it came from, right? And then it might be attached to some sort of trauma that happened in the past or some words that somebody spoke over you. Then you can forgive that person and move on. And then I'm telling you, like, when you do that, it's like freedom, you know? And then now you're open, you're like, emotionally, socially, mentally, and all of that impacts who you are and how you operate on a daily basis. So, you know, I've heard this before where personal and business shouldn't mix together. You know, we're talking about work here, keep your personal stuff out. You know, well, look.
You can't. It's impossible.
You can't. It's impossible because what happens personally affects your business life, and what happens in business affects your personal life. So you interwind them.
You have to find a way.
And so if you're so transactional based and so worried about generating the lead, getting the sale and producing and collecting money in your business, right? And you're so focused on transaction, you forget about relationship, you know, and that's the part in the business that's really important.
Give advice to someone successful in our business, like really successful, but he has a drinks, maybe does not want to acknowledge the problem yet, but I see a lot of guys drink almost every day and every meeting. they can't go in a meeting and not drink. Give advice to that person. Like, for example, I had a problem with, like, not me personally, but I have a couple of reps for big billion-dollar companies.
Yeah.
And we would go to conferences and stuff. And I try to do business with them. Yeah. And every single party or every single event, expo, yeah, conference, they're always drunk. You're trying to talk to them, yeah, about, like, what your company is. And they're never available. It's like drinking. I mean, they have that reputation. And I feel like in our industry, it's top down. You have,
yeah,
you know, billion-dollar companies. They'll spend $50,000 on a party making all the roofers drunk. Mm-hmm. You come to them, hey, can you help me wrap my vehicle for $2,000? Nope, not in the budget. Like, you just wasted $50,000. So that is just like that. And now roofers, they see that.
Yeah.
So when we go to the conference, when we go to expos, that's what big boys do. Now, yeah, we're here. Now what we do, you know, you want to recruit someone, you take them out, wine and dine. And it's almost like a circle and it becomes a bigger problem, but
yeah,
it becomes a business. People say it often, you know, let's go for a couple of drinks. Let's, mm-hmm, you know, taking sales guys. Like now, like my big company took me out for drinks. I felt good that night. Now I'm going to take my sales reps out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to buy taps. And to be honest with you, that's my problem. I remember I got DUI and I'm not, like, I would never drink and drive, whatever.
Right.
But one night, and was not even planning. I came, yeah, in, we were working in the mall. Okay, this is my story. First time I share it with anybody. So my guys were working a weekend in the mall.
Yeah.
Like putting, we got a booth, paid for it. And I come in, it was Saturday night, empty. So I came in to help them to fold it out. I told my wife, I'll be back in 2 hours. And my guys sitting in the bar, just having drinks. Yeah. As a boss, I'm like, I have to pick up a tab. That's what boss do, right?
Yeah.
So I pick up a tab. Of course, I have two drinks with them. And they're my guys, 4 sales reps. Yeah. You love them. Mm-hmm. They're supporting your lifestyle. Before you knew it, like, and it was Oktoberfest. I'm like, okay, so someone, you know, you have a couple, yeah, drinks. Your wife is already sleeping. It's 10:30. Guy's like, let's go downtown. So let's go downtown. I have a few more drinks.
Yeah.
I'm drinking beer, feeling great, whatever. Next thing I know, come back to the office. And we still with the guys, you know, have a pack in the office, I guess. Someone have another case. So we have a few more drinks. Before,
yeah,
you know it, I live 2 miles from my office.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't go. There's no strip clubs. There's no, like, dances, crazy nights. Me and my sales guys just getting to know each other, personal, driving home, get pulled over for whatever reason. It wasn't even speeding, change lane or something. I was trying to change the music on my phone. And stupid enough, of course, I got pulled,
yeah,
over.
Yeah.
Ended up literally handcuffs. It was, yeah, 2 years ago. I did not drink nothing for like 6 months. I'm like, you know, I'm going to prove to myself that this is not addiction. And prior to that,
yeah,
I was not like everyday drinker or anything.
Yeah.
I literally did it for my guys. The problem I see in the industry that this becomes norm, that,
yeah,
this is what you do with yourself, yeah, is what advice would you give to someone who is just that culturally or just have to do it because everybody, yeah, else is doing it?
You're capable of so much more. You're capable of so much more. You know, you have an assignment on your life. You're here for a reason. Your DNA is so specific. Nobody else on the planet has your DNA. Your fingerprint, you're identified by your fingerprint. Nobody else in the entire planet has your fingerprint. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at how everything's been created.
So alcohol is not part of our DNA?
Dude, no, that's not what I'm getting at. But it's like, if you look at how everything's been created, it's so specific. And if it's so specific, you know, and your fingerprint is so unique, then you're here for a reason. And so, like, what are you waiting for? Why are you allowing, you know, if you have a problem, this is me speaking to someone that has a problem. Why are you allowing this become a problem?
I see.
You know, you have a calling on your life. You're not supposed to be doing this.
I want you to give advice to someone who doesn't have time for a gym. You're obviously a gym fanatic, mm-hmm, per se. I see a lot of guys, they just have this excuse. I work too much. I put, mm-hmm, 12, 14 hours a day. So I just don't have time.
Yeah.
What do you tell that person?
There is time. There's time. There's time, dude. Like, we all have 168. This is so cliche. We all have 168 hours in a week. I was just posting about this today. Right. I've been doing the same workout every single day for 235 days now.
You're nuts.
235 days. And so I just figure it out. It takes about an hour for me to do this workout, right? And so today, you know, it's like I had to figure out. Now, I want you guys to listen because this is important, okay? This is where it gets good. So we all have a full schedule. We're all busy. We all have priorities. You know, we have families. We have our business. You know, we have things outside of, you know, the business that we do, hobbies, whatever. So all these things that are important, right? Every single Tuesday morning, I go to church and we do men's prayer. There's 100 dudes. We get together. You know, we do prayer. Okay. I don't miss. I do not miss that. Right. And my Murph workout is a priority. I don't miss my Murph workout. I make it happen.
1 mile around, 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 squats, 1 mile around. Takes about an hour.
With a vest. 20 pounds. Yep. And so, you know, I book my flight. My flight leaves at 10:30. I'm here and then I get home. I land around 11. So I'm like, I got to get this where I'm not going to get home to my house till probably about 11:45, you know, midnight. So I have to do this in the morning. So we have our executive L10 meeting at 8 o'clock. I have men's prayer at 5:30. I have to get ready and get to the airport somewhere in there. And I got to get this Murph workout done. So when am I going to do it? Well, I woke up at 3:45, was out the door at 4 o'clock doing the Murph workout, got back to my house at 5:00. Jumped in the shower, got my kid out of bed. We went to men's prayer. I got back home, got all my stuff, went to the airport, you know, did the L10 meeting from the car, and now I'm here.
That's dedication right there.
So part of it is commitment. It's a lot of it is the amount of commitment that you have. However, like here's some tips, right? So if you guys, like I wrote a Facebook post about this. So the tips are this: when you have a full plate, these are the 5 things that you can do with these tasks, you know, when it gets busy. So number one, if it's not a deadline oriented task, you can just move it. You know, you can push it back, you know, push it back a day, push it back 2 days, push it back a week. That's if it doesn't have a deadline, or you could just delete it and just decide, you know what, it's not that important. I'm just going to take it off the list. You know, I only have time for these. This one's actually not that important. I'll delete it. You can decide to work longer hours. You know, we all know what that's like, right? We just, it didn't get done. It has to get done. So I got to figure it out today and work long hours to jam it in. You know, and that's basically what today was. I was just like, well, I got to get it done. All this is important. It's all deadline oriented. So that's what today's about. Or you could delegate. You know, if you have somebody that you can delegate to that, you know, you can delegate it with 80% proficiency, then delegate it off, you know, get it off your plate, then it's removed. And then the last one is leveraging the tools and technology around you. I mean, we live, you know, it's 2020. I mean, there's an app for everything, right? So there's a way to leverage your time to get things done more efficiently. So those are the 5 things that I utilize.
One more thing. You can cancel stupid things that you do daily, like spending too much on the Facebook, watching videos, whatever. Like if you cancel some stupid stuff, sometimes you'll be more productive. How many guys out there that I don't have time for this? And you see them arguing for 30
time
minutes.
Wasters. Time wasters and distractions, dude. Yeah. Video games are a big one. Social media is another one. Yeah. And I'm guilty of that.
We all are. Yeah. But the thing is, when you get in the time crunch, I would rather spend less time on Facebook than cancel the gym.
Yeah. The other thing that's going to help too is develop a reason why. So why are you going to go to the gym? You know, are you going to do it just to work out and get big biceps? Because, you know, if it's to look a certain way, that's not going to last very long. You're going to get super frustrated because you're not getting the results that you want fast enough and you're just going to quit. Right. So come up with a stronger reason why.
Can I give you guys a reason why? Your reason why, if your body is not your body, it belongs to your wife. It pisses me off when I see beautiful wife and man with a huge bum here, and he will be picky about how she looks, and he does not care what he gives her. Your body is not your body, it's your wife's body, vice versa. So take, like, this is not mine. This is not for me.
Yeah, so for me, it's, you know, I want to mow my yard when I'm 80. I'm going to be in such, you know, shape, you know, where I've taken care of myself, where I want to mow my yard when I'm 80 and also see my grandchildren have children.
Absolutely. And you want to play soccer with them. You don't want to, like Jason Kalipa, one of the CrossFit Games early champions, whatever. So he said, like, one of the things with the CrossFit, so he won CrossFit Games for 2008, and he owns the gym, so he said, my kids will never have to worry about me, like, taking care of me, because, he's fit.
Yeah.
And that's amazing. And, you know, for me, I'm raising champions right now, and I work out with my kids, and it's awesome.
That's great, man.
I look at my dad, and I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm trying to teach my dad at 60, like, deadlift and stuff, because he had lower back issues, like, they're not mobile, they're like, you know, I don't want to be like my dad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I wanted my kids to be not only proud of me, but also not to take care of me.
Yeah. 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 So I hear you.
You talk a lot about leadership and culture, like mm-hmm. a lot. It's like mm-hmm. number one content that I see from you. It becomes also like a cliche. Recently, everybody talks about leadership. Everybody talks about culture. It's not sexy. Nobody wants to talk about it. But what's the culture and leadership for you? I know Roofing 101 is all about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first it starts off with like values and beliefs, you know. So
how do you do that? Like if I don't know nothing about it, how do you write it? Is there a book? Is there like something you whiteboard yourself?
Yeah. I mean, I explain it to, hey, listen, this is what we believe in. These are the values of the organization. This is our mission. This is our vision. These are the priorities and how we make decisions. I think it's important that you guys understand how we make decisions. So when you see things done, you understand. I think that's important. Another thing is we help our employees develop their own vision for their own life, you know, personally and professionally. So, hey, what do you want to accomplish in your life? You're here for, I don't know, if we're lucky, 80 years, 85 years. So what do you want to accomplish in your life? You know, what's the vision for your life personally? And so we help them create vision boards, and that's a very important part, because then that helps people develop more of a sense of purpose and more of a vision as to why they're doing what they're doing. And essentially, like, they, at some point, they're going to move on and go work somewhere else, or they're going to start their own company or whatever it is, right? And so part of what I see our job is at Roofing 101 is to help cultivate, their sense of purpose. Hmm. And that's super important.
Love it. What trends do you see in the roofing industry right now?
Trends do I see in the roofing industry?
Well, do you see trends towards franchises like yourself, consolidations?
No, I mean, I know that, let's see, trends that I see in the roofing industry.
What's changing?
Marketing.
Marketing.
Yeah, marketing's changing. Marketing's changing, labor's changing. Those are probably the two big ones.
How is marketing changing?
Well, it's becoming more digital.
How people finding?
How
people finding. But you still door knocking mainly?
We still door knock, yeah, mainly. Yep. Yeah, which we were affected in California. But all the other markets, we weren't as affected as much.
Do you see bigger companies rising, consuming smaller companies? Like, I see, like, a lot of investors coming in the space somewhat, like, Salt Lake City, California, like, a lot of, like, smaller purchases, mm-hmm. like, bigger guys buying smaller guys. Do you see that?
I've seen it more in the last year than I have in the last five.
Would you take your company public? Is that the end goal?
I wouldn't say it's an end goal, but it's
one of the options.
It's one of the options that's on the table. I would.
How big
say,
is Roofing 101 today?
We have 70 some odd employees, and we do, I think we're around 10 million right now. So we'll probably do, around 12 to 13 at the end of the year. We just started a commercial division, so.
How many? I know you license in a lot of states. Mm-hmm. What states are active?
The states that we're active, so we're active in Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, Texas, Kansas, Missouri.
Like that's where you have offices and you actually have-
Yes, yep. And we are kind of active in Minnesota. The thing is I'm not like really into operations, so mm-hmm. I'm really removed from operations. So I do know that we set up in Minneapolis. I do know that we are set up in Salt Lake City.
If you don't want to be crushed, stay out of
Minnesota. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
We don't need no
yeah.
more.
And I think we're licensed in every state west of the Mississippi, minus Colorado, Nevada, and New Mexico.
And what's the goal? You want to be in every state?
Every state. Every state minus Alaska. Why? And where it wouldn't make sense.
What's so different with Alaska?
Well, come on, dude. I mean, the production season's like, what, 30 days? You know, 30-day production cycle, yeah.
Who makes the best roofing product, shingles?
Owens Corning right now.
Right now?
Yeah.
What else would you install?
We are looking at IKO. We are looking at GAF and CertainTeed. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. The biggest issue that we're having right now is a matter of being able to get materials timely. So when that happens, it's like we have to look at options.
What do you see future of solar? Tesla on the rise. Like, there's a lot mm-hmm. of interesting products there. Is solar going to be big?
Yeah, I mean, solar's not going away. It's going to continue to be big. I think it's something that roofers need to grasp and know how to work around. We're currently in the process of, we had a large solar division, you know, at the beginning of the year. And then once, you know, the shutdown happened, it basically shut down our entire solar division. And then we decided to go out and get our own electrical licenses, which we're still in the process of doing, taking the testing and all that, which takes a while. You know, electricity is not something to mess around with. So the idea is, what we want to do is we want to service, you know, and do warranty repairs for solar companies, and then also install our own solar. And then, you know, obviously when hailstorms go through areas where there's solar, I mean, we have our own licensed electricians. We can remove the panels, no problem. You know, because usually, like, how big of a pain in the butt is it when a storm comes through to get like Tesla or some of these other guys to come remove the panels?
Of course.
You know, and then the other issue is, you know, if you remove them, you can actually void the warranty and all that kind of stuff. So us being certified with those companies, we're going to be able to remove and reattach, no problem.
Give advice to a newer roofing business owner. Someone who just got licensed.
Yeah.
About to recruit first couple guys working under him.
Get into traction. You know, read EOS. That book. Yeah, read that book. Understand what your vision is, mission, you know, mission, vision, values, you know, your belief structure, priorities, all that kind of stuff is very important to get on paper, because that drives the direction of the organization. You know, the business is more than just a logo and a fancy slogan. You know, like, there's something behind it. People want to work for more than money now. They want to work for a cause. So have a cause attached to your business. You know, don't leave it up to nonprofit organizations to be the ones that operate with a cause. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, we're for profit for a purpose, you know? We have a cause. So.
Well, yep. Give advice to the homeowner who is about to replace the roof, interior contractors. Yeah.
Great question, man. Here's my advice. Ask them if they do layovers. One question will solve all kinds of problems. Why is that important, Dimitri?
So what if they say, so if the company does layovers?
If the company does layovers, well, essentially when you do a layover, you avoid manufacturer warranties.
That's one. Yeah. Well, some will, like, I think CertainTeed will lay.
Yeah, they reserve the right to refuse to cover any manufacturing issues. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So they always, like, manufacturers always have the choice.
You know, like, we just lost like half of Canada. Like, out there, like, people just unsubscribe, dislike, move to another.
Yeah, they're like, no.
Yeah, we're done.
So
with this.
Do you do layovers? And then ask them about ventilation. Ask them about the ventilation system. Not like leading questions like, well, do you install ventilation?
Yeah.
You know, ask them questions like, what kind of ventilation do you recommend? And then what are you going to do on my house? Because majority of homes out there are not ventilated properly. And so, you know, I mean, every roof.
But majority of the sales reps don't know nothing about it.
They don't know nothing about it. Most of them, right? So you can test them by asking, what would you do on my house with ventilation? And, you know, when I met with manufacturing reps, I asked them the question, what's the number one reason why you do not cover a warranty claim? And they all say improper ventilation.
Last question. Give advice to someone who's been in the industry for a long time, mm-hmm. maybe 10, 15, 20 years plus, but never broke maybe $1 million, and see how this crazy world is changing and want to grow and maybe tired, don't know, you know, what to do else. You've been doing it for too long. I see a lot of guys out there.
Yeah.
You know, they run million-dollar operation. They see all these companies by youngsters all around them. They just can't adjust. They still maybe do old school paperwork.
Yeah.
What advice would you give them if they want to change something so they have a little brighter future?
Yeah. So one, you're going to have to make some changes if you want to, you know, the way technology is changing now, it's progressing at a faster rate than what it normally does, right? So because it's progressing faster, the change rate and the modifications you need to make in your business happens more often. So you just have to be willing to make those changes, whatever those might be, you know, and without looking at the business, I wouldn't know what they are. But you have to be open to technology. You have to be open to the changes in marketing because consumer behavior changes. You know, like it all changes based on the environment, and we're dealing with an gnarly environment right now, you know, and so consumer behavior is changing, which means marketing is going to change. The other thing that I would recommend is, you know, consider either A, getting a coach, or B, bringing somebody in to help you make decisions, you know, and
That's cool. A lot of guys, they just, I know what I know. You can't teach me, you know, I've been doing this 20 years. And it's crazy to me because like I just got a comment on YouTube channel on what was it, the guy said we've been doing it for 6 years and he was arguing with me about either gutter covers or something, like so fierce, and like if you've been doing it for so long you should not have this argument. It's just like such a closed mind.
Yeah.
And it's like, and facts are facts, numbers are numbers. It's not my opinion. Go do study, like, you know, go.
Yeah, be open-minded to possibility and the potential that there is something more and greater out there for you, you know, than what you're currently doing, you know, and being open-minded is, being open to possibility is very, very important in a business because things change and you have to be open to changing. You have to adapt.
Awesome. Yeah. Graham, it's absolute pleasure. Guys, if you don't know who Graham is, on Facebook, if you're not following him, follow this guy. He is a mystery to me. Like I try to read people.
Yeah.
And I can't understand when you're smiling or where you're serious. You have that smile where
I'm seriously smiling.
Like, no, honestly, he explains he smiles, but he's not, he's serious. His content is gold. Follow him. You started doing a lot of more content this year.
Yeah.
I love that culture topics and building a business, everything behind.
And here's one thing. Here's one project that I just started last week. It's called Leaders Next Door. And it's all about, it is all about building up like the next generation of young leaders. And the way we do that is through teaching kids between the ages of 7 and 14 how to make money in neighborhoods, which is super important. You know, kids need to learn how to make money at a young age. You were just talking about that with your son.
My son is.
And then not only that, what do you do with the money when you make it? Yeah. So do you spend it, save it, or give it? You know, and so we teach all that.
Just before I flew here, we sat down with our kids and we have five. And we're opening saving account to all of them because now every birthday, you know, grandparents give them $100. So that money literally sits somewhere. Like my 5-year-old Max has like $200 right now. And they're like, why do we need saving account? Why do we need, because you can't just have money laying around here. So we teach them, open checking account. What are you going to do with it? Awesome, man. Love your content. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thanks,
dude. Thanks for coming.
You got it.